Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
According to government numbers, there were 282,371 doses of COVID-19 vaccines administered in Canada this Wednesday. That's a lot. Canada is very lucky. But it's worth noting that Wednesday's number was actually the lowest total number of vaccines administered in one day since May 25th, when our vaccination effort was still ramping up. One day's numbers are just one day. But the overall pattern clearly now shows a plateau and even a slow decline in daily vaccinations. Some of that decline was bound to happen, but not all of it. With more than 75% of eligible Canadians having one dose, and more than 50% having two, we've picked the low-hanging fruit when it comes to vaccinations. The last mile of this vaccine rollout is going to be tougher. It's going to be about making shots easily accessible, about targeting individuals who, for whatever reason, simply haven't bothered yet. And it's going to be about convincing vaccine-hesitant people in person, one-on-one, to get their shots. None of those things are easily done at mass vaccination clinics or in big lineups at hospitals and community centers. Fortunately, that's not the only way that we administer vaccines in this country. There is another way, and I don't want to spoil it, but it's the way we administer almost every other vaccine in this country. So maybe we could try that next. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Dr. Liz Mugga is the president of the Ontario College of Family Physicians. Hello, Dr. Mugga.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. This is something that a lot of people we've talked to about vaccines said as a conversation that we should have at some point. So I'm really glad we're having it.
Yeah, me too. You know, I think that we're excited as family doctors to be participating in the vaccination rollout for COVID-19. But I think there's, you know, lots to dig into there. So I look forward to our conversation about this.
So first, maybe in general, pre-COVID, or just leaving COVID aside, how much of vaccinating in Canada is done by family physicians typically?
Mm-hmm. So the great majority of vaccination is done by family doctors in their offices. So we start vaccinating when we see patients who were infants. So right from the very, very beginning through childhood and then all the way through to those who were quite elderly. So that's the reality right across the country is that we're doing that. There are some vaccinations that are, you know, we share the responsibility with other parts of the health sector. So school age vaccines that happen often around grades 7 and 8, that's something that public health takes the lead on in many provinces, including in Ontario. So those school-based vaccines would be an exception. And the flu shot is one where we share with pharmacies. So in the most recent year, pre-COVID, family docs gave about 55% of all flu shots in Ontario, and then the rest were given through pharmacy and some public health units. But overall, family docs really are the ones leading vaccination for patients from cradle to grave.
So if we had been having this conversation, let's say back last November or December, just as we were starting to get approvals on these vaccines and it was becoming a reality, what role would you have envisioned that family doctors might play in the rollout?
Well, given what I just told you, you know, that this really is our core business, I just anticipated we would be heavily involved in this vaccination rollout. It was clear, of course, that this was not a typical vaccination effort. I mean, this is a massive one that was going to require a different approach. So I also assumed that we would have some mass vaccine clinics and public health would be leaning in and pharmacies would be leaning in, really an all hands on deck. But I absolutely thought we would be part of the, you know, really on the main team, so to speak. I looked a bit to what was happening in other jurisdictions. I think many of us did as family doctors. So if you think about, say, the United Kingdom or Israel, who were ahead of us in terms of their vaccine rollout, and we looked at what was happening there, we saw that family doctors were playing a bigger role. In those countries, family docs had been engaged really early. They had been onboarded so that they were ready. It was really kind of a system where everyone was asked, you know, do you want to participate or not as a family doc? And if you did, you were given those vaccines and off you went. So based on all of that, I think we really had a particular impression and we're looking forward to, you know, really participating as partners and as leaders in that vaccine effort.
And so when did you start to realize that you would, not to say not involved, because I know that family doctors are doing some things, but when did you kind of realize you would be more, I guess, more on the bench than in the starting lineup as like the team came together to put out vaccines?
Yeah, it became clear to us in sort of December-ish that we were not being called upon early on to participate in the planning for the vaccination rollout. And that was our first indicator, I guess.
Right.
And then the vaccine started to roll out and we saw that government was handing the vaccines to mass vaccination clinics and to pharmacies. And that we weren't going to be engaged. So actually in Ontario, what we did at that early juncture as things were just starting is we came together as family physician leaders and leaders in the primary care sector generally across Ontario came together to talk about this and to think about, well, what's our strategy going to be? How do we get our message out that we really want to participate, that we're feeling like we're on the bench, so to speak? So that was an early effort that was a grassroots in some ways effort and then included many associations and organizations that support or represent family doctors, including our Ontario College. And then what happened was there was a bit of a trickle that came to primary care, to family docs. So the province said, well, we'll have some portion of vaccines that will now go to family physicians. And in 6 public health units, there are 34 public health units across the province. In 6 public health units, we will give those public health units a small amount of vaccine. At that stage, it was only the AstraZeneca. And we'll see how it goes. We'll pilot this.
Hmm.
So we were given in those areas, family docs stood up and said, sure, we'll take some. And public health units handed the vaccines to those clinics. And the vaccines were all allocated and jabs got into arms, so to speak. And then that pilot was expanded. And so then all 34 public health units, again, were given small amounts, again, AstraZeneca, to give to a portion of the family docs who had their hands up in each of the 34 public health units. So where we are now is, you know, in that same model, essentially, there are somewhere around 600 to 700 family practices or primary care sites, so to speak, where vaccines are being given by family doctors and in office.
Can you give me a little context around that? Maybe like how many family doctors are in Ontario in general? Like what percentage are we talking about that's actually putting shots into arms?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there are 15,000 family doctors in Ontario. And of those, somewhere around 10,000 are practicing what I would call comprehensive family medicine. So that's the cradle to grave where, you know, you would be, this would be absolutely part of your core business. So when I say 700 sites, there could be a number of family docs working in each of those sites. So we don't actually have those numbers, you know, that would be information that the government would have, because when you're giving vaccinations, you record yourself as the vaccinator. But we don't have those numbers on how many family docs are giving vaccines. We just have how many sites, you know, locations, clinics, so to speak, is it being given? So,
right.
You know, I can tell you, we know from our family doc members of the of our college that there are many who have their hand up and have been wanting vaccines and haven't been able to give them.
Was there ever a conversation with the province about that? You know, when you kind of realized that it wasn't going to happen and you said, hey, we have our hands up here, like we can help. Were you ever given a dialogue to explain why you weren't more heavily involved?
We definitely made that message clear to the ministry in every way that we could. In March, we did release the results of a survey that we had done of the public, which showed that there was a good portion who were still uncertain about getting vaccinated, and that particularly for that group, to move the dial for them from feeling unsure towards feeling certain about and ready to be vaccinated, more than any other healthcare provider, it was their family doctor who would help them do that. And, you know, I would say it was a disappointment to us that we had to continue to advocate to participate in something that was really our core business. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess I would be remiss to not talk about, you know, all the other ways family docs were participating in vaccinations. So there were lots of family doctors who were and are still working in those mass vaccine clinics giving vaccines. There were family docs who also partnered, again, with public health to support vaccination in long-term care and retirement homes. So where those efforts were happening. So, you know, I think we really stepped up in any way that we could to be able to participate in this really important effort to get everybody vaccinated. But the piece that was missing was that opportunity for us to do it in office.
The big story will be back in just a minute.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
Did you ever get a reason? Like, was it logistics? Was it that they just thought mass vaccine clinics would be faster and more effective? Or was it just like, wait your turn, you'll get some?
You know, I think you'd have to ask them exactly what their reasons were. It was never laid out for us explicitly. I think at the front end, you know, it was a vaccination effort that I think they said, like, you know, how do we get this done the quickest, right? That was the sort of main imperative. And I guess they saw the mass vaccine clinics as an efficient way. And I think that's, you know, true. And I would commend public health for their incredible work in terms of running those mass vaccine clinics. But, you know, what we're seeing now with the plateauing is that, you know, this absolutely was about an efficient, speedy vaccination process being important. But the other outcome when it starts to plateau is you need to reach the full population, and you will get to a point where there are people who can't or don't want to stand in a long line in a mass vaccine clinic, or don't feel that the pharmacy is where they want to go. And, you know, now they've turned to us, and I would say, well, yes, this is what we've been telling you, you know, if you'd involved us from the beginning, we could have helped in the front end so that we did this really as all hands on deck. And we also would have really been working on that population that maybe has questions and wasn't prepared to go somewhere else to get vaccinated. So at the start, there was certainly a question about transportation of the vaccines. So the AstraZeneca vaccine was one where it was much easier to transport and store. And then we just learned, well, that's not a problem, actually. We can have Moderna and Pfizer. Both of those can be stored safely and perfectly well in a family doctor's office with absolutely no questions. But that may have been, you know, an early piece. I have to say, you know, when we look across the country, I think we can see there was a similar pattern right across Canada in terms of the potential of family doctors really not being realized.
Let's talk maybe about why that can change now. You know, you mentioned we've hit the plateau. That's one reason. Maybe let's start with how you guys can maybe, you know, I can't speak for every instance, but can maybe try to succeed where other vaccine pushes have failed?
No, I think I would start with what family medicine is all about, which is this relationship with a patient over time. So, you know, I know my patients from many of them from the time they were little babies all the way through. And so, you know, that trust that builds between the family doctor and their patient is such a powerful part of supporting vaccination. I mean, I think when something's new, like a new vaccine, you want to go to somebody who you trust to talk about that. And, you know, they've given you good advice before. They've seen you through thick and thin. They've given you all your other vaccines. So that's who you want to talk to. And, you know, from my end, I would say I feel so well equipped to have these conversations with my patients. I mean, I know everything about their health history. I know all the medications they're on. As a doctor, I am absolutely up to date on all of these vaccines, what their side effects could be, when you need to take them, how they work, and you know what they might mean for you as an individual. You know, I don't have to speak in generalities. I can say I know you and what's going on with you, and you're on this medicine or have that illness. And so I combine that, you know, that trust and then our knowledge, our scientific knowledge, and then our very individualized understanding of that person's health conditions. And all of that together is the reason why family doctors are really just so uniquely positioned to provide vaccines and at any stage of a vaccination rollout. But right now, you know, as we're talking about this sort of the last mile, some people are calling it the last kilometer, at this juncture when we really have people who, yeah, haven't even, there's a portion who haven't even had their first shot. So, And, you know, we see patients over time. And I will say from personal experience that these conversations about the vaccine and can take more than one go, right? So I'm having multiple conversations over time with someone, you know, and I take every opportunity, every visit that I have with somebody right now includes a conversation about the vaccine.
Can you give me an example of what those conversations might be like?
Yeah. So, I mean, I really, honest to goodness, I have it with every single patient encounter. And if it's a mom who's come in or a dad who's come in with their child, and maybe their child, you know, isn't of an age where, you know, they're getting vaccinated, then I still take that opportunity to talk to the parents. You know, have you been vaccinated? Like, yeah, well, let's talk about your little one. And then let me just finish by asking you this. So I asked the question. It's asked and really important that this is approached with empathy, this conversation, and with curiosity, I would say, because there's not one reason why somebody may not be ready to be vaccinated. And so, you know, it's actually quite interesting to have those conversations, you know, and you prod a bit. Well, like, you know, what? Tell me what's on your mind. What are you worried about? And sometimes, you know, I had a patient recently who I talked to, and I was really surprised that she hadn't been vaccinated. She's got multiple health issues, and she lives on her own, so she's frail and would be really at risk for COVID complications. And she hadn't been vaccinated. And I, well, what's that about? And I, you know, my head maybe had some assumptions. Well, maybe it's about the medicines she's on or her illnesses or whatever. And no, her worry was she pretty much hadn't left the house during the pandemic because she was so worried about catching COVID. So the thought of going to a mass vaccine clinic or even into a pharmacy was one that she was very fearful of. So, you know, I have to say we were lucky, our clinic in Ottawa, we are vaccinating our patients. We were lucky to get vaccines. And so, you know, then I could work her through that and say, well, you know, here, let's book you here. Let's book you in here. And so, you know, for her, that was what it was about, right? It was about a place where she felt safe and an environment that was familiar to her. With someone else, it's could be a totally different conversation. You know, people have sometimes have a sense about what their personal risk may or may not be. So I have had patients where They actually have very sort of public-facing work. I had somebody who was a mechanic, for example, and is working in a garage, so pretty closed in space with lots of other people, and has to talk to clients when they come in with their cars. And but his sense was, well, I'm not at risk. Like, I just go from my house, and then I'm, you know, in the garage. And then I was like, well, actually, you know, you're essentially like an essential worker, and you are exposed to people. So let's talk about that, your perception of your personal risk, right? And now, you know, there's lots of questions. Now we're dealing with youth. So,
right.
You know, I think for anyone listening to this podcast, I would say like that group, getting that group vaccinated, the 12 to 17 year olds is just such a critical priority for us over the summer. So that we make sure as many people, you know, as many of these kids are vaccinated when they head into school as possible, just how important that is. And, you know, that again was a different kind of conversation that you have with the parent and with the child, right?
Sure.
About maybe some of them are really afraid of needles. Like, that's actually a super common thing. So, you know, yeah. So those would be, just a few examples. But I think sometimes, you know, if we make some assumptions about why somebody may be hesitant, we really miss the mark.
That's really interesting, because I think when we talk about vaccine hesitancy, we all get this image in our head of those people online or on Facebook who think it's going to give you a 5G chip and think it's going to alter your DNA and all of that kind of stuff, when that's actually a really small percentage of even the people who aren't getting vaccinated.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Jordan. It's really a spectrum. And I also think what somebody might say online or with how they may react, you know, to a certain bit of news in social media and everything, that may be very different than the conversation that they feel comfortable having in a safe place with their family doctor, where they can really put on the table, like, this is actually what I'm really worried about, right? Like, I have a real fear here, and you can safely talk about it and help them move towards, you know, hopefully being more ready.
So let's talk about the last mile then.
Yeah.
The first question I have is, have you guys had an internal conversation about putting a plan together, being ready, having your hands in the air and being ready to go? And second of all is, have you been given any indication that the time is coming for you guys to get in the game?
Mm-hmm. So to your first question, like, absolutely. We've been talking about that as a college. We've been doing that in partnership with other organizations that support or represent family doctors in primary care. So we've worked really hard to keep all of our family doc members informed, engaged, ready for when those vaccines arrive. And in terms of what we've, you know, we heard the announcement from Minister Elliott, I guess that was last week now, saying that family doctors were going to play a bigger role. We welcomed that. As I said, you know, it was something that we've been telling them for a long time. So we welcomed that messaging from her. We don't know what that's going to look like yet. So we have not been told, you know, does playing a bigger role mean that we're going to get more vaccines? And if we're going to get more vaccines, you know, how many vaccines are we going to get and when? So the details of that are not clear to us. We've, you know, certainly understood that the government has seen that things have plateaued and they need to do things differently, and that doing things differently, you know, you and I have just talked most of this time about how that, you know, what that means for family doctors being more involved. I think doing things differently is also going to mean more sort of just generally kind of smaller community-based efforts where the vaccines are going to the people in more pop-ups, you know, maybe school-based. So I think it's, you know, there are a number of strategies that we understand that they're looking at, but no, we have not seen a plan. And we, you know, look forward to receiving that information from government, and it, you know, we hope to hear more and continue to give that messaging back to government and other partners.
Dr. Mugga, thank you so much for this. I feel like I got some real insight into what you guys can bring off the bench, I guess.
Yeah, so that's the point. Yeah, don't bench us. We're a core part of the team, and we're absolutely, you know, here, ready to support the efforts to make sure that all Ontarians are vaccinated and we can get back to normal again.
Dr. Liz Mugga is the president of the Ontario College of Family Physicians. That was The Big Story. For more from us, including lots and lots and lots about vaccines, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. Talk to us anytime on Twitter at @TheBigStoryFPN. Email us with your thoughts and opinions and criticism, and most importantly, praise, at @TheBigStoryPodcast, all one word, all lowercase, at rci.rogers.com. And find us in your favorite podcast player, whichever one it is, we'll be there. Stephanie Phillips is the lead producer of The Big Story. Ryan Clark and Joseph Fish are associate producers. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Be safe this weekend. Enjoy it. Thanks for listening. We'll talk Monday.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.